This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work.
No one can shine on their own. You all have to work as hard as each other to make a film. And a really successful film is reliant on everyone. I always compare it to being an orchestra, actually. Everyone understands that. You can't always be the lead violinist. Sometimes you're the bloke at the back with the triangle.
That's right.
Who's only going to be useful at one particular moment. But at that one particular moment, that's what you need. That's how I view filmmaking.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the Academy Award-winning makeup artist, Lois Burwell, as she and I continue our discussion about her life and work. When I first met Lois at the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival, I realized immediately that she not only possessed a great sense of humor, but she was ardent about her devotion to her craft and her colleagues. Last week, in part one of this interview, we spoke about Saving Private Ryan and her work with Steven Spielberg. Today, she is going to share the Braveheart experience with us, and that includes her Oscar win and the reality of the Academy Award experience. So let's pick it up with her relationship with actor and filmmaker, Mel Gibson. Now, I want to speak to you about the process of Braveheart.
Right.
From everything I have watched online, there's a beautiful piece that everyone out there can watch, and I do urge everyone to seek this out, behind the Oscar speech, where you speak about that moment when you heard your name called. And of course, looking at Mel Gibson, who had tears in his eyes. And it's so beautiful. It's such an intimate moment. And with everything else you're saying today in this interview, I'm getting to know you as that kind of woman, which is really rare and wonderful. But what was the Oscar experience like for you, actually, after all that work?
Well, it was mixed. I think most of those type of things are mixed, actually. They're not fully joyous. They're not fully splendid. And they're obviously meant to be. I tell you what I can describe it as being, and obviously that's down to everyone's own personal experience, if they've ever been married. But it's rather like getting married, which is joyous and wonderful. And at the same time, you're worried about Auntie Betty sitting by and there's going to be a family argument at some point. You know what I mean? It's that thing. And somehow in the process, it stops being about you and starts to be about everything else.
Wow.
I think that that was my experience. It might
yeah.
not be everyone's experience, but it was definitely mine. And I tell you for why, because I was shooting on The Fifth Element in England at Pinewood. So I wasn't free to enjoy all the build-up of it. I was still engaged on The Fifth Element.
Of course,
Getting
you're
ready
in your
for
zone.
Boston. So yes, doing all those things. And before the car came to pick me up on the, and there was a question about even being able to attend, you know, and I didn't get to the nominees luncheon and, you know, none of those kind of fun build-up things. It was just sort of out there. And there was a little bit of acrimony and jealousy that came in as well, which can taint the water, you know, can taint the well if you allow it to. So there was that. And so the car came to pick me up to take me to LA because I was going to only be there for the weekend. And I was still putting false eyelashes on the air stewardesses for Floshton. So it was just, all right, okay, here's the bag, the roll-on bag, get on the plane, get off the other, you know, get off here, got the time difference, all of that. You're going to, you know, I met with Mel, which was great. And we managed to have a bite to eat. And obviously John was nominated as well, my husband, because we met on Braveheart. So it was a very special film and being excited for him as well as myself. And the day of the ceremony, I mean, I know most people will go to hair and makeup and have all that done for them to go. Well, of course, I didn't have time for that. And so it was just kind of, you know, do something and go. And it was kind of nerve-wracking and everything. And my real fear was that if they would, and I congratulated everyone in our category, And John was sitting on the far side of the theatre with his category, cinematographer, so we weren't sitting together.
Ah, okay.
So there was a chum of mine that I'd known for years and years and years, who was English, who'd come out to LA to live. So she was my plus one. So that was fun. And we've known each other since we were in our teens. So we were sitting there, and I was on the end of the aisle. And there's this sort of thing that if you're at the end, you stand at, it's because they put you there because it's a better chance of what they think you're going to win or whatever. I mean, that's absolute nonsense. And I know that because recently I was a governor, and one of the things I did was, as an officer of the academy, was the awards committee. So everything award related, I would be involved with. So I know it's absolutely a nonsense about sitting at the end means that, names on the ticket.
Right.
Anyway, so they called our names, and my fear was that I wouldn't be able to stand up, that I'd just be rooted to the spot, like you are in dreams sometimes.
Yeah.
So of course they called my name, and I was like a greyhound out of at the dog races following that rabbit. I went so fast to the steps to climb up to the stage that I looked behind me, and Peter and Paul were sitting there going for the camera. I was standing there on my own. So I ran back to collect them, and we all went up together. I said the most stupid thing to the lovely young actress who was presenting it. I said to her, "Thank you for saying my name so nicely." Where'd that come from? What was that? And of course, the other really ridiculous thing was that I've been on stage before, and as you know, when you get the footlights and everything, you just see a kind of like a shape, unless you're in
Right.
theatre in the round. You just see a shape of a head in the audience, don't you? They're more or less lost in the blackness because you're illuminated. Well, of course, how stupid am I? It's lit for television, so you can see every face. So you're standing on this stage in front of your peers, seeing every face.
Right.
And I hadn't expected that. So I was very grateful that Peter spoke because he was a good spokesman. I mean, he was always keen to be the one to speak, and thank God for it, because I wouldn't have made sense, I think. Or I'd just have said thank you, because I think that's actually all you have to say, unless you're moved in the moment.
And we are speaking
But
about Peter Frampton and Paul Pattinson, who you shared
yes,
this with. Right.
that's
Okay.
right. And the wonderful thing was that, I was standing there and I saw Mel, and Mel had tears in his eyes. And I don't know why, but it settled me because it was our experience. It
Right.
was our work that brought this about. So you're not alone.
Yeah,
It's not
uniquely shared.
just my, yes, it's a collaboration. It's a shared experience because no one can shine on their own. You all have to work as hard as each other to make a film. And a really successful film is reliant on everyone, including, I think I always compare it to being an orchestra, actually, because that everyone understands that, which is not, you can't always be the lead violinist. Sometimes you're the bloke at the back with the triangle
That's
who's
right.
only going to be useful at one particular moment. But at that one particular moment, that's what you need.
It means everything.
And it's everything.
And
And
didn't
without that, it doesn't work. So that's how I view filmmaking
Wow.
in general. But the weird thing about the happening, oh, well, I'll tell you a funny story, actually. It's quite a personal one, but I hope it makes your listeners laugh. So we've got the statuette, the gold bald man. And it's very heavy, weighs about 6 pounds. It's not lightweight at all. And of course, as nature is, and nerves and all those things, I want to spend a penny. So we're following this track, and you go through, one room of press, then another room of press, and so on and so forth, before you go back to your seat with the gold bald man. But you see, obviously, the gold bald man doesn't have your name on it.
Right.
So it could be anybody's. So they point out where there's a bathroom. So I pop to the bathroom. Now, the stall doors are quite high and the cistern sloped. So there wasn't anywhere to put Oscar.
Oh no.
So you're not going to put it on the floor because someone could reach underneath, possibly, or it doesn't feel right to put it on, a loo floor.
Correct, correct.
Or you couldn't balance it on the cistern because it was too heavy and it started to slide. And I needed to pee. So I had trousers on, actually, satin trousers and a velvet top. So I'm trying to get ready to have a pee, balancing Oscar under my chin and in my shirt, turning my shirt into kind of like a bag shape and balancing this thing. And I thought, the glamour of it all,
Exactly. This is one of those moments that no one would believe.
Yeah, no, exactly.
After you had literally just thrown your stuff in the bag and got on the plane and got in the car, and there you are. No pomp and
But
circumstance.
the other thing was that when I came back, because I had to come back to Floshton, we were shooting Floshton with 300 extras,
Oh, wow.
all of which had Jean-Paul Gaultier costumes, and we'd gone through fittings, so there were
Right.
specific looks of groups as well as all the principals. As I was coming back through, obviously they scanned the bag because you can't. What are you going to do? You're going to have it in. I was going to have it in my carry-on because I only went with the carry-on because I was only there for the weekend. So of course they scanned it. It's this whole thing, leaving the US, about what you have in your bag. Can you open your bag? So of course, open the bag, and there's. Oscar, really. I'm not going to walk through holding it, so it's in the carry-on bag. So there was this whole big brouhaha about having this, and everyone, oh, congratulations. So, of course, on the plane, they started to make much of me. I mean, it was really very sweet, but somehow mortifying. And I literally flew back in and went straight to the set to get 300 crowd ready. And
My
there was
gosh.
Oscar, in the bag.
I would have had Oscar out sitting on that seat next to me proudly, waiting for photos.
I think I
Oh
probably
gosh.
would now, but I didn't at the time, I think you have to be, there's something about getting older that makes you bolder
Yeah.
because you realize that I don't know about you, and I suppose it's a personal reveal, and I'm not trying to body shame anyone at all, but I know that now I think back and I would never wear a bikini. For example, bikinis weren't me because I didn't think that my shape or form was good enough to wear a bikini. Now I look back and I think, you idiot, why didn't you do that? Now I wouldn't wear a bikini, but I've got good reason now. Then it was like, you're crazy. And life's a bit like that. I think there's something that happens to women as they get older or. When I say older, that sounds so rude. I don't mean it in that way. But as we mature, and probably there's something about menopause that does it too, where you can be emboldened in a
That's right.
way that you would never have been in your 20s or for me in my 30s.
But don't you think it's also through the work you've done and what you've built? I mean, you're a creator. And I think as we get older as creators, we learn that we have a new power where we can be reckless. We can be more reckless. We can change our perspective all the time. It kind of enables us to be freer. That's how I view it.
I agree. I agree completely. And I think it also, you're less what, in a weird way, the more a body of work you have, so the more credits you have and the more success you have, the more you have to lose. And at the same time, you care less about the thought of losing. So
Exactly.
you're emboldened.
Exactly.
But those two things exist exactly at the same time. At least they do for me. And I suspect they do for you. And in a weird way, there's a willingness. I mean, now I talk when I'm with a department, and I have a team working with me, and the team is really important to me. That one of the things I say is, don't worry about it. You've made a mistake. No, that's fine that fails, because through that failure, that's actually a really important part of being creative.
Totally.
the ability to fail. Because if you aren't able to fail, you're not able to succeed because you're not taking risks. And everything that's created is a risk, and you have to make yourself vulnerable.
So well said, Lois Burwell. That was actually one of my questions today. How many times have you faltered or had a failure? And how many times has it taught you, especially in the world of makeup? I mean, we're talking about a normal film, and then we're talking about films like The Fifth Element, strong with prosthetics. My gosh, if you're not taking risks, I don't think there's going to be a real hit of a movie, you know?
That's right. No, yeah. And oh, I've had numerous failures. I mean, really. And you should never be too worried about, I mean, obviously, if it's fail, 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 then you will be fired. But if it's, I don't think this is working, take it off, start again.
Yeah.
And say to the actor, no, this isn't, it's not working. Can you bear with me? Can you
Yeah.
bear with me? And let me try X.
Yeah.
And either it's a yes or a no. But 9 times out of 10, they'll go with that because they too know that this isn't working and they want something that works.
And they're
So.
seeing the process unfold and that synergy, which is so exciting, which is what makes you great companions as well. I want to ask you something specifically about Braveheart. You know, I'm just going to gather that you and Mel Gibson really connected. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we, well, I say on my part, I think he'd say on his part too. I don't like speaking for someone else and being presumptive. But yes, I mean, I first worked with Mel on Air America,
Right.
and then we did Hamlet, and we get on very well.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful director to work with. He's very hail fellow well met. That he's not a hierarchical person at all. So, for example, on Braveheart, every day, if he wasn't editing or he wasn't doing something that he had to do, taking a meeting, bearing in mind he was producing, directing, and starring in that film. So, if he wasn't doing something that was absolutely work related, for example, I've never known him just expect someone else to get his lunch. He will always queue up and get his own
I
lunch
can imagine
from
that
the
out of him.
caterers. And he would go and sit with every department on that film to see how the film was going for them during lunch.
Impressive.
So,
Impressive.
yeah, he's very good. And one day, for example, he lost his temper. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on everyone on a film set. It looks like you hurry up and wait, and you're standing around waiting for something to happen. But actually, you never really relax. It's always a high tension because time is money. And it's a force to come up with something in that moment, in that second, and get on with it. And so there was a particular, it was in one of the battles, and Mel lost his temper and he shouted at one of the ADs who was dressed as one of the crowd. And then he realized that it was a mistake. So, unlike most people who would lose their temper and get away with it because of their position publicly, he actually apologized publicly as well. And that says a lot.
That says a lot, definitely, about his integrity and his journeyman attitude to being, you know, one of the essential players, not just the director and the lead actor. You know, the look that you developed, the colors of Scotland, the blue and the white paint.
Yeah.
I heard, I don't know if this is just a rumor, but I heard that Mel's original idea was to have the St. Andrew's Cross,
That's
and
right.
it was your idea to have this very distinctive look in the blue and the white stripes. That is something that's so easily recognizable. Was this just a gut reaction of yours? Were you strong about that idea?
I was strong about that idea, and we went through a whole slew of Polaroids. It was in the days of Polaroids. So on a Saturday, made the woad, and the woad came from a formula that I'd done in a film called The Draftsman's Contract, which was a body
Yeah.
mock-up. But we changed it up slightly. Peter Frampton was very clever with that. But we used clay and pigment. So the actual woad war paint was dark blue, and then it dried because of the clay content to the light blue that it
Okay.
was. So you have to picture that it was navy blue when it went on, and then dried with a hairdryer, it became that. Anyway, it flashed off and dried. So we started off with the St. Andrew's cross because that's what Mel wanted. He said, "I want something simple." And I kept saying, "It would be, I really want you to have a window that you are looking through, because that's what the leader is doing for Scotland. You are looking through to the future, through a narrowness. That's what I see it as being." And he didn't want that, purely because he'd made the film Man Without a Face, I think it was called.
Of
I can't
course,
remember what it was
yeah.
called.
Yes.
And had a burn all the way down. And he said, "People will think it's just that rehash." And I went, "No, they won't." "Yes, they will." No, they won't. "Let's try it." So we tried everything else in between. There was a hand over his face, a woad in the shape of a hand. There were the across stripes that we actually used later in the film. I called them his go faster stripes. So we had the go faster stripes. We had the Celtic cross. In fact, if you look at the makeups on the other members of the Wallace clan, the other actors,
Yes.
all those looks were all the things we tried. So,
Very
and
interesting.
then at the very last innings, he said, "Oh, okay then." So I did the half face, and then wanted this side to follow the contours of his face. That's how that's devised. So it's just straight and then contours. So it's an interesting, or I hope an interesting, thing to look through. And although we didn't want it, when we got to that, having gone round the houses and tried everything else, he went, "Yeah, that's what we're going to do then."
You're right. You were right all
So,
the time.
and that was the pair of us working towards it together.
Together. I love it. I love it. You
Yeah.
developed a phenomenon, Lois Burwell, in that you did. For
Well, I
every
tell you what
soccer
was
fan.
really exciting. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to jump over you. I tell you what was really exciting about that when I saw football fans, I saw that football fans were painting their faces like that, and people were doing it and going to fancy dress parties. And I just thought, well, that's something really wonderful. I mean, they'll never know who did it. They'll never know where that idea came from, or how we worked towards it, or what it was made from. But how brilliant that it can go into the public zeitgeist. How wonderful. And that,
Without question.
it's great. That's really a good thing.
Without
And
question.
that film, really, really galvanized the Scots. And there was the how it resonated with the heart of Scotland was something that, was fabulous, absolutely a wonderful gift. And I'm really pleased that that happened, because it could so easily have gone the other way.
That's
But
right.
it was just at the right time. It came out at the right time. It captured the feeling. And it's a really thumping good story. I mean, it's not historically accurate, but it's a thumping good story.
Well, he went big and it worked. It
Yeah.
really worked for you both.
And the thing was that Mel paid for the last 2 weeks of that film out of his pocket, because it had gone out over budget. I mean, I'm sure I shouldn't have revealed that, or maybe now it's so many years, nobody
It's
cares.
probably common
But
knowledge, yeah.
it's an interesting thing to tell you how committed he was to making that film, making the film he wanted it to be. So he actually stumped up the money himself. And one of the images, which I really like actually more than even the woad that everyone thinks of, is when he's got the completely blue face for the nightmare scene, when he's on the horse, riding the horse forward, and there's just blood across it.
Yes,
And it's very dramatic.
that's the
And
very
I
dark one.
painted the blue on his face, and he picked up the blood and went on it. So it was a real collaboration.
Wow. Talk about being in the groove again. You guys were on a roll. Are you still in contact with Mel Gibson?
Yes, occasionally, kind of Christmas cards. Although we did speak a couple of months ago. But it can be, 2 years and we don't speak or be in the same room. But it's always the same when we are. And he's very fond of John too, and yeah, it's good. And it doesn't
That's
actually,
interesting.
I don't think it, I know it sounds bizarre, but it doesn't matter if you work with someone again or not. Because if they want to explore and find new people and not be in that comfort zone, they want to push themselves, then that's fair enough. You
Exactly.
have to give that to someone else as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's really wonderful. I promised all of my listeners that this is where the magic is made. And next week is the third and final part of my journey with Lois Burwell, when we speak in detail about her experience on the film Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, directed by Steven Spielberg. And the music that we are hearing throughout these interviews is Good Night, Sweetheart, performed by Al Boley. This music is precious to Lois, as it was sung after family gatherings in her London home while she was growing up. You will be able to find these interviews and much more at centerstagewithpamelacoon.com. So until we meet again, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.